This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. The Juno Douglas City Museum opens a new exhibit this Friday, Voices of the Wilderness, which will be a family-friendly event. And joining us now to talk about the opening and other happenings at the museum this month, we have Alyssa Borges, who's Curator of Public Programs. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Shelley.
And Sean Riley, U.S. Forest Service Wilderness Ranger. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here today. Sean, let's start with you. Could you please give us a little background on the Voices of the Wilderness program?
Well, the Voices of Wilderness program is a fantastic artist-in-residence program. It actually started here in our wilderness areas around here. It started in Tracy Arm Ford's Terror back in 2010. And that year we hosted three artists. One was a poet, we had a painter, and also a theater director. So as you can tell, we have a diverse group of artists that like to join us. Since 2010, we've grown to a multi-agency partnership with wilderness areas throughout the Alaska. So that's including the U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the National Park Service. Then they're hosting artists all across Alaska. And we've hosted over 80 artists in multiple disciplines since then. And the purpose is for these artists to come out, be inspired by the public lands, and then share with the community the artwork that conveys inspirational message and values of the wilderness areas and the public lands. Our program is quite unique in that artists are partnered with a wilderness professional. They're engaged in stewardship projects, and each residency is totally unique. The residency, typically runs June through August, and the dates and length of residency vary. It's an incredible program. And we'll be hosting artists this year in both Tracy and Kootenai Wilderness. Mm-hmm. So this exhibit is highlighting the Voices of Wilderness program specific to our area. So we'll be showing pieces from both the Kootenai Wilderness as well as Tracy Arm Ford's Terror. I believe we have 14 pieces on display, the majority of which are of the visual spectrum. So we have a lot of photographers, painters, as well as we'll have slideshow of photographs that participants have shared with us through the event. And it's going to be fun. It's a really enjoyable program. And we'll have more information on how to apply and for this year, because we'll have residents again, like I said, this coming year, and that'll be opening in January.
Great. Sean, you're a wilderness ranger. What does that mean exactly, and how are you involved in the Voices of the Wilderness program?
Well, I've been involved with the wilderness program here since 2009. And so I've been very fortunate enough to see this program in its infancy when Barbara Lydon, who's the program lead for this, so I was there in 2010 when this started, and I was a wilderness ranger. So I would be partnered with a artist in residence, and they would join me in our wilderness stewardship efforts. So we'll be doing campsite monitoring, solitude monitoring, air qualities, engaging with the public and education. And we pretty much deputize our artists to come out with us, and we take them on backcountry patrols of the wilderness areas. So I was in Tracy Arm Ford's Terror, and I'd take artists out for 8 to 9 days, and we'd be traveling by kayak, sleeping in tents, moving around, and being wilderness stewards, and they'd be joining us in the mission. And since then, I've been moved into a new role as a wilderness manager of these wilderness areas. And, I have a great connection to these lands, and I know many of our locals do here as well. And I'm happy that we have this opportunity to bring these wilderness areas and this event to the Juno Douglas City Museum.
You must have some wonderful stories out of all those adventures that you've had being out in the wilderness, and particularly taking out other people. What have been some of the highlights for you, or some of the memorable moments?
some of the highlights and memorable moments, you have a very broad sense of, memorable moments that really stand out. You know, you have interactions with wildlife that's unique. Of course, when you're in a wild place, there's nothing scripted. So it's just incredible interaction to have. Everything's at play, and that's the idea of wilderness, is this total wild, unique opportunity to have a primitive, unconfined recreation, opportunities for solitude, all these great experiences out there. So there's a plethora. Through this program, the big thing with bringing artists, these people are coming from all across the nation, and it's really important and inspiring when we see how these public lands affect people. I've had artists, write me afterwards that they're like, my life is changed from this experience, to see how wilderness, changes people's perspectives, inspires them. And then they're able to use that inspiration to make change. Our wild lands and artists have been connected for so long. The early artists, was it Thomas Moran? And the names escape me right now. Pretty much our wild lands were very unique. And these artists captured them and pretty much made national parks happen. We didn't have social media back in the day, so it was really important that we had these artists engaged. So really, we do education as well, and just seeing how visitors are impacted by the wilderness resources, some of the most memorable out there. And of course you have like wildlife sightings, like the wolf at sunrise that you came across, or a giant calving glacier, or just like utter still, like calm waters paddling along, ice-filled fjord. There's just too many to list. We have a long day.
It sounds like you've formed a lot of personal connections with the artists that you've worked with. Are there any favorites as far as pieces of artwork that have come out of this program in the time that you've been a part of it? And have you ended up with any pieces yourself?
I wish I have. I have a list of emails that I'd like to contract some pieces in the future. Part of this program is that they come out with us, that they're inspired by the program, and in return, they provide a piece, a donation to the Forest Service and the program, and that's meant to share for the public, and that's what we're hosting here at this event. Another aspect is a public outreach, so they may do like a blog, or they might do a art show, or they might do a education piece at the local schools. Some have made like journal books, things like that. A lot of things have come out of it. I've really come through memories through it, and it was really great to see the breadth of work that's really come out of this since 2010, and so many memories and all these trips, what are memorable moments, and just seeing like one piece could bring back like 9 days of experience from one piece. So everyone's a gem of a memory to me, because I have a connection to the place. And that's what's incredible, is people will see this and they'll see a connection to a place and they'll have a memory. But then there's another aspect where I have not seen that place, but that's a wild, incredible place, and I'm thankful that is there. So I think a lot of people who might not like really connect right away or know what that piece of art is will be still inspired. And I hope it will make them, appreciate their public lands and hopefully visit that area.
Well, thank you, Sean. Alyssa, turning to you now, what do you think is most compelling about Voices of the Wilderness, the program, and also the exhibit?
Well, I think it's really fascinating that artists come from, I believe, all over the country. So I think a lot of people probably have never seen Alaska before they participate in the program. That's really amazing. I personally have been very, heart touched by some of the photographs, because it's of the Fords Terra area, where I've in the past done a lot of kayaking, and I think that's the most beautiful place on earth. And it's fun to see the artists in that environment with the rangers You know, the photographs are really fun. The artwork's great too. But it's, yeah, it's a really fun exhibit. I think there's something for everybody. And I want to let people know there's all kinds of freebies we will be providing connected with the exhibit. Some of them are coming from Sean, the U.S. Forest Service activity books for kids of all ages. We'll have those available to take home. And I created a little, a nature writing journal, which utilizes probably one of those educational outreach programs that or activities that he mentioned by Suzanne Stutzman. And we have her pieces on exhibit. She's a nature artist, journal artist. And so it has instructions on how to create your own nature journal workbook. And I created these workbooks with her instruction and additional pages that anybody can take, and they can do their own nature drawing. And we have a little activity to do up close nature drawing too during the event if people would like. And then we have also linked our free little art gallery challenge this month to this exhibit. We have little wooden tree rings and other materials that are free that we're challenging our artists to create a winter scene for a hanging piece of art. It could also be an ornament. So that'll be out as well. And I believe we are going to have other objects, like we have maps and all sorts of things. So, and as well as Smokey with this picture opportunity with Smokey Bear, who will be there, I believe, from 4:30 to 5:30. Does that sound right? So all kinds of fun stuff happening, free things to take.
I think we have to back up for a second. I feel like you may have buried the lead there. Did you say Smokey Bear will be at the City
Smokey
Museum
Bear
this Friday? That's incredible. And so the kiddos can come and get their, they can meet Smokey and get their pictures with him as well?
That's right.
Oh, that's so cool. So this Friday, the exhibit is, so there'll be sort of a bunch of activities as well as the exhibit from the Voices of the Wilderness program that features the artwork that the artists have created as part of that program. Have I got that right?
That's right. Yeah. And the actual opening is 4:30 to 7 p.m. that night. I did want to let people know that we are free all month, and this month we are sponsored by Michelle Store. So Tuesdays through Saturdays from 10 to 4 p.m. we are free, so people should come on in. We still have our Jessica Honlin's exhibit, Mountain Season Spirits, up. All her pieces sold last month, but we still have unframed prints for sale. Lots of wonderful, I think every piece we have in a print. So still things to buy if there's gifts people would like, and a fully stocked store as well with her work as well as other local artists working.
That's cool.
But the big, I was just gonna say, mention the other thing too, is that we are having an art auction that night. So a lot is happening in the galleries.
Wow.
We have, so we have a silent auction with some pieces that we found that we already either have represented in our collection, we haven't added them. So they're unframed pieces, and we will have those out as well. There are 8 pieces. Artists such as Dale DeMarn and Joanne George, as well as others. So people can come see the exhibit and also bid on some pieces if they like. And in addition to that, we have a lot of pieces we've found that are slightly damaged that people can make an offer on and walk away with that night. Walk away with. So lots happening for Gallery Walk.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you guys are really going all out, which I fully support. So thank you for the rundown. Hey, where can we go if we missed any of that and need to go back and look at it? Is there a place online?
There is. Our website is juno.org/museum, and you can find everything there. We're also on Facebook. We're on Instagram as well.
I do really enjoy your Facebook page. And Sean, back to you. Is there any place online where we can find out more about Voices of the Wilderness?
Yes, there is. You can go, you can just Google Voices of the Wilderness, and you can search for that as well. The program is open to the whole nation as well as other countries. So if you're not in Juneau and able to visit, please go online, Google Voices of Wilderness. It's probably easier than me rattling off the website address, because it's not super straightforward, but it's great. And I'll have more information at the exhibit, and I'll be there as well and can provide more. You can also call the Juneau Ranger District and Admiralty Island National Monument here on Back Loop Road, and that's 586-8800. And yeah.
Sean and Alyssa, thank you so much for joining me today. Anything else you want to share that maybe I forgot to ask you about?
I'd just like to say thank you for hosting us, and we're really honored to have this exhibit up through the winter at the Juno Douglas City Museum. I'm really thankful that they're able to host us at this fantastic venue.
And I will add that this show will be on exhibit through April 23rd of 2022.
Oh, that's great. Lots of time to go and see it. Well, thanks again, both of you, for coming on the show today and telling us all about the exhibit at the City Museum and the Voices of the Wilderness program. That was really interesting. So thanks, and have a great time on Friday.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm Shelley Delaney, and it's time for our December check-in with the Juno Police Department. Dave Campbell, who is Deputy Chief of Police, joins us now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. So I can't believe it's already December 1st. It's kind of shocking.
I know. The year sort of flew by and also didn't. So anyway.
Yeah, be nice when this year's in the books, that's for sure.
I agree. Well, it seems that every time we visit, recruitment is always on the front burner for JPD, and today is no different. Am I right?
Yeah, and you know, it's not a Juno Police thing. Recruitment for law enforcement across the country has been an issue for a couple of years now, and it's something that's really, really important. One thing that we have not done is lower our standards. I know several other agencies in the country have done that, and historically, whenever an agency lowers its standards, it just causes problems down the road. It solves a temporary problem, but it causes more problems down the road. Our process is pretty long, but we are making inroads to it. We just had one of our new officers, Taylor Davis. He just graduated from the Public Safety Academy over in Sitka 2 weeks ago. So he's back in Juneau, and he's going to be hitting the street and starting his field training here in the middle of the month. So that's exciting. And then we hired another officer, position. Gentleman's name is Chris Herrick, and he's coming to us from Montana. And he's going through what we refer to as our mini academy. What we do is when we hire a new officer, we bring him in and we provide him a bunch of training to kind of prep them to go to the academy in Sitka. We give them things like laws of arrest, search and seizure, do policy reviews, go out to the range, make sure they qualify, pepper spray them, all the kind of stuff they have to do. And then we put them in a uniform with their field trainer, and we have to do about a month on the street before they go to the academy so that they can have some real world experience. So when they're learning stuff in the academy, they can kind of have a frame of reference. And it's been pretty successful so far. And then in January, we're hiring another officer, a gentleman by the name of Jeremy, I believe it's Foster, I think his last name is, and he's with the getting out of the Army and lives in Anchorage. He's going to come down to Juneau and become a police officer with us. So we're really excited about that. It takes a long time. So even though we have, one officer that just finished the academy, two officers that we're going to be sending to the academy in February, we're still down 7 officers. So wow. If you funnel out those 3, because they're not really, solo, carrying some of the weight themselves, we're really down 10 effectively. So it really makes a difference for us from a staffing level. And the process is long. Getting hired takes about 3 to 4 months, start to finish. Once somebody does get hired by us, then, they have to go to the academy in Sitka. That's a 16-week live-in academy. They do our mini academy. They do a 14-week field training program. So from the time we actually hire somebody to them being, boots on the ground, working as a solo cop is about a year. During that point in time, we still have people that earlier this year, we had 3 officers that weren't really on our radar that left us. It was the first time in about 4 years we'd had somebody leave us. So it was kind of unexpected. Of course, one officer that left us went and worked for another agency down in the Montana area, and then 2 of them just got out of law enforcement altogether. So when you lose somebody like that, it's really hard because it takes a long time to replace them. So we are in a state of continual hiring. We are advertising. We have the ability to do online tests and and remote physical fitness tests. And it's pretty easy for someone who's interested to apply for us. But our standards are still high. About 90% of the people that do apply for us don't make it. And we keep those standards high, for a reason, because it's important.
Wow, that's all really interesting. I'm glad to get that background information on your recruiting and hiring procedures. It sounds like it's a real investment for you guys when you bring someone on board.
It is, and there's a tremendous amount of discretion and authority that comes on being a police officer. So the most important decision you make is hiring the right person to get go. If you hire someone that's got a good moral base to them, they're going to continue to have a good moral base, and you want to make sure that you have someone that can be trusted, can be out, using their discretion. Even with, the prolific use we have of body-worn cameras, that's just a tool, and there are limitations to the tool. So you just really need to be able to trust someone to use good judgment and to come to the part for the right reasons. So that's why we put such a tremendous emphasis on hiring the right people to start with.
Well, as a citizen, that's very good to hear.
Thank you. And then kind of like in line with that, one thing that's pretty exciting for us is we recently got accredited. So we are an accredited police agency. I believe they're going to do the formal presentation in the middle of this month at the assembly chambers, but in my box right there.
I see it.
That's our plaque. That's the plaque we got from the Oregon Accreditation Alliance saying that we're accredited. And it was a pretty long process. It took us about 2 years to get through it, start to finish. We had people work on it, I'd say two sergeants kind of exclusively. One was injured on light duty, and then one we had a new position. But people always ask me, well, why do you want to be in an accredited agency? And I think my answer, what I come back to is the people of Chino deserve an accredited agency. My son is an accountant. If I was to hire an accountant, I'd want a CPA, a certified public. If I go to the dentist, I want a board certified dentist or a board certified doctor. You deserve that when you look for professional services, and police is no different. So the people of Juneau deserve to have a professional agency that meets standards, and not our standards, but standards that someone else has established as best practices. And that they come in, we provide them all our policies, we make some policy changes, and then we have to provide them proofs to say, here's what we say we do, here's what we actually do that we say we do. And it's a pretty long process to go through it. And I'm probably one of the most excited people here because I've been in it from the beginning, and to actually, get the blessing that says, yes, you are an accredited agency was huge for us. And it's a big feather in Chief Mercer's cap. He really pushed it. And I'm just happy for the citizens of Chino because, two summers ago when all the social unrest came along, people rightfully said, well, what is Juneau doing during all this? And it's one thing for someone like me to say, well, trust us, we follow best practices. But when you have an outside agency says, yes, they follow best practices, it gives reassurances to the people that we interact with that we're doing what we say we do, So accreditation is huge. And I'm kind of surprised, honestly, that more agencies don't do it, because it does leave that level of transparency that's really needed when you're talking about, government authority.
Well, I bet many of them don't do it because it is a lot of hard work. And I think that it's probably been 6 months of interviewing the police department, and I believe accreditation has come up every single time. And I knew we were getting closer and closer and closer to the day when it was actually going to be official. And so congratulations to you from me, because I know what a big deal it was and how much hard work it took from your department.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a really big deal for us, and I'm looking forward to having it actually presented on. I think it's the 13th, but don't quote me on that. I think, but this month is when it's coming.
That's great. I'm also glad that you're taking a moment to celebrate that success and that milestone.
Yeah, and it's for all of Juneau. It's not just us. It's for all of Juneau. And we do things like and we have like awards committee meetings, and if an officer gets an award for doing something or a dispatcher gets an award for doing something, I don't view it as, that individual officer or that individual dispatcher just did something great. I'm thinking, wow, it reflects on all of us and what it means for us to be an agency. I've been very fortunate. I've traveled all over the country, talked to police departments and police personnel and commanders from all over the country. And Juneau is really special. We have a tremendous amount of support from our people. And I talk to some of these people where it's more like an us versus them mentality. I just don't get it. You know, I think part of it is that, you know, 100% of the police officers that work for Juneau live in Juneau. And, you know, you'd say, well, of course, where else are they going to live? But for the vast majority of the country, that's unusual. And you have officers that will live in one area and go to work in another area. And I think you tend to treat people differently when you don't live where you police, you know? So yeah, it's our geographic isolation and yeah, there's no other options, but we reap the benefits of having 100% of the people that work as cops here live here, you know?
Yes, I totally get it. Well, that's great. I'm really glad to hear about all of that. That's great, great news, as I already said. So thanks for sharing that and congrats to everybody there. Taking a little bit of a turn, I know something else on your list to discuss today, and maybe this actually is a good segue from living and working in the community. Patrol allocation. You have some updates there, but what is patrol allocation and what's changing?
Well, patrol allocation basically is how do we take the resources that we have and distribute them across the city to make it be the most effective. And probably one of the biggest things that we've done recently is this has become an issue in a couple other areas to say, you know, well, what's happened, you know, with you know, the Glory Hall moving from downtown to the airport. Mm-hmm. And we have seen our calls for service in that area has gone up. It's really still too early to tell if it's going to be continuing or where the trend is going, but it's enough of a trend for us to say, yeah, we need to kind of address this. So we've kind of reallocated and shifted some of our people to focus more in that area. So we just wanted to reassure people that we are getting calls from people that are in the area that are concerned and say, yeah, we are having more officers in the area as a physical presence and just communicating with people and being in the area to kind of address some of those concerns. So that's something that I thought be important to get to.
Great. Thank you for sharing the update there. I think it's important as well. Finally, winter is upon us in all of its forms, which are snow, slush, and ice, and rain. What would you like our listeners to keep in mind as it pertains to public safety? I know that's something you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, and you know, we normally talk about this at the beginning of wintertime, and this winter has been a particularly snowy one early. And I think that, you know, we've had, unfortunately, some really bad traffic collisions recently, including fatality traffic collisions. We've had single car accidents, multiple car accidents. We've had collisions between pedestrians and drivers. So it's kind of run the gambit. And it's just really good to kind of let everybody know that it is snowy. They do need to slow down, be a little bit more aware. If you're a pedestrian, you know, it's really helpful to wear bright clothing, to stay on the bike path, to cross at crosswalks, maybe even carry a flashlight with you. You know, kind of have your head in a swivel as what's going on. If you're a driver, you know, slow down a little bit. Four-wheel drive is great. You can go through a lot of stuff, but four-wheel drive doesn't help you stop. You know, stopping, all vehicles are the same when it comes to, you know, the tires on the roads and the type of, you know, the brakes, ABS, that kind of things. And give yourself a little more time, give yourself a little more distance. When my kids were younger, you know, when I was teaching how to drive, you know, I used to tell them that, you know, being right doesn't matter when you're in a traffic collision. You know, you might have the right of way and, oh, I have the green light, I am right, I can go. But if you're in a collision, you start talking about, you know, loss of life and property and injuries and damage, you know, you're better off letting somebody else, you know, drive. You need to drive defensively. Yeah, you might have the right of way, but if you need to stop for someone that's driving recklessly, let them go through and do whatever you can to avoid the accident, because it doesn't matter if you're right. You can be right and hurt, and it's not going to make a difference if you're hurt, you know. So just drive very, very defensively. One thing that we are doing a little differently this year that we just put a Facebook post out about is this time of year, we also have a lot of vehicles going to the ditch. And oftentimes we get a lot of calls to our comm center, and we only have two dispatchers typically working at any given time. So if they start receiving multiple calls about the same thing, it can really take up their time really, really quickly. So like what some other jurisdictions have done, we now have these pink tags. And if a vehicle is in the ditch and we're aware of it, the officer or the CSO will put a pink tag on it and put some survey tape around it as like a visual, hey, we've been here. Yeah. So if you're driving along and you see a vehicle in the ditch, you see it's
got
the
pink tag.
Don't need to call. We are aware of it. I think that the surveyor tape we've already got to use the tags, I think are going to be coming in early next week sometime to get those too. But that's something to keep your eye out for.
All right. Well, Deputy Chief Dave Campbell, thank you so much, Juneau Police Department. That's all really great information. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing all these, all of this from accreditation celebration to driving tips. So thanks very much for your time today.
Great. Well, I know it's a cliche, but I'll see you next year.
Yes, you will. Have a good holiday.
All right. Take care.
Take care. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Tomorrow, December 2nd, marks the anniversary of the winter storms in the Upper Lynn Canal that triggered a large landslide which killed two people and swallowed up homes in its path. So joining us now is the reporter who covered this disaster, Claire Strimple, who was working at KHNS then and is now a member of our staff here at KTOO. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Shelley.
Thanks so much for coming on the show today. You were working at KHNS at the time of the landslide. What can you tell me about the days leading up to it?
The days leading up to it felt like fairly normal days. Working from home, though, this was in kind of the height of that first COVID winter. But the days leading up to the landslide were slightly stormy, but nothing wildly unusual. But it was when the rain really started to fall on Tuesday or on December 2nd that we really knew something was wrong.
When did you first hear about what had happened, and how did it feel as it all unfolded and information was coming in and details emerged?
It's interesting. When people who are outside of the community of Haines think of that day, they think of the one major landslide that's a, you know, huge scar on the mountain and a kind of a focus of a lot of the coverage. But that day started really much earlier with landslides in another part of the Haines borough that also destroyed homes and took out roads, and that was at about 6 a.m. So we were covering what was the beginning of a long day of disastrous events. Starting from early that morning, power was spotty in town. Downtown was flooded. The airport was flooded. Those landslides knocked out the road to the ferry and the fuel dock. Wow. So Haines was really cut off pretty completely. I remember we had a medevac in the morning that had to land downtown at the public safety building because it couldn't land at the airport. There was road damage. You know, people woke up to just a pretty grim morning, and then it wasn't until the afternoon that that side of Mount Riley let go and the beach road slide happened.
Wow.
So
up to that point, what was your experience with covering natural disasters like? And can you share a little bit about the journalism background that you had and how it maybe helped you through that time?
I didn't have any experience covering natural disasters. I guess I'd been fairly lucky until then. But, you know, my colleague Henry Leisha and I did have a lot of experience in town. And so we just got out there and started reporting.
I have really clear memories of just really becoming familiar with your voice during that time before I ever met you, before you moved here, because we were hearing it a lot over the days and weeks that followed the landslide. And my heart just went out to you because I know there aren't that many reporters in Haines. So I can only imagine the kind of pressure that was on. And then so how long were you just reporting on that every day before you got a little bit of relief? What was that time like for you?
Oh, that time was busy. That was a sleepless time. But there was so much support. Again, my colleague Henry Leisha, and then, you know, we knew that the CVN reporters, the Chilkat Valley News newspaper reporters, were out there as well. But there was huge support from the network, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and especially from the station. Rasha McChesney came over on the first ferry that was able to come in. And that was after, I think, 4 days, and that brought over, you know, geophysicists and a whole bunch of relief, not just for the news team, but for all of Haines. I remember so much aid came on that ferry, and it was a big relief to have the roads cleared and have them be able to come in.
When was the last time you were in Haines?
Yesterday. yesterday I was visiting family and friends for the holidays, but also checking in with some of the people who I spent a lot of time with over the course of those days as the disaster unfolded and as the recovery began. So.
And 1 year later, what is the state of the site and also the community?
There's been a lot of healing in the last year. You know, if you take a ferry into Haines, you'll definitely see the scar on the mountain. It's covered in snow right now. But there is a road that was put in over the summer. And some people are even in their homes at the very end of that road now,
wow.
Which is to me a sign of recovery, but it is still hard to think about and look at. And the public works in Haines has been, you know, busily fixing, trying to do long-term fixes on so many roads went out, kind of hard to overstate. And of, you know, over 20 households that were permanently displaced, I think only 7 are still looking for a permanent housing solution.
Oh, wow. I was wondering about the damage to property and to homes and if people were still displaced. I'm happy to hear that most people are back in their homes, but still some being displaced must be difficult.
It's difficult. You know, I talked to some folks who I've, you know, been talking to since the disaster happened who have moved on because their homes are still in an unsafe place or in the path of a potential slide. Others who are looking to come back to Haines, some are as far away as the North Pole, some in Georgia. But still, you know, I think this week is heavy on their minds.
And, of course, 2 people lost their lives in the landslide. Did you know either of those individuals?
Yes, Haines is a very small town, and everybody's pretty connected.
I understand there is a memorial being planned.
Yeah, this weekend, and that's going to be out, I believe, at Picture Point in Haines, and hopefully will be a moment of healing when people can really come together again.
Do you know what they have planned for the service, for the ceremony?
I don't have the schedule. That would be a great question for the organizers. I won't be there, unfortunately, but I do know that I believe some faith leaders are going to be speaking as well as the mayor.
Any other thoughts or reflections 1 year after such a terrible tragedy in which you were so close to?
Of all the people that I've spoken to, everyone said that they would never wish such an event to happen or to happen to anyone else, but they were grateful to see what people could do when they came together. I think the response in Haines was pretty spectacular.
That's great to hear. Is there any resource or, I don't know, a particular article or images or anything like that that you would maybe, I don't know, that comes to mind as something that really memorializes the event for you?
Oh, any one thing. I wish I could say there was, but nothing is coming to mind. I think it was such a diffuse disaster. There were so many points of action, of kind of destruction and of reconstruction and of aid. I'm not sure. maybe the smell of coffee and the piles of food and clothes out for evacuees that were in the Legion.
I also have a hard time picturing any one image, but I did take the ferry to Haines over the summer, and the scar was very visible on the mountainside. Everybody on the ferry was looking at it and was talking about it. It's such a obvious reminder of that day and what happened, more so than any, I think, than any memorial monument could ever be. It's just, you can't not think about it. You can't not see it. You can't miss it. It's scary, actually. It's kind of a disturbing image.
Yeah, one of the geophysicists who was out in the early days of the disaster monitoring rainwater said to me, "The mountains are beautiful, but they're dangerous." And that is a reminder that we live in a place with a very active geology and that is not stable always. But yeah, looking out at that right now, you know, it looks like it hasn't changed at all. But when I was speaking to the mayor, Douglas Olrud, he was talking about how long it might take for things to grow back. And he said he was hoping that people, too, could grow back in that way. And he said, you know, there are things that grow back quicker. There are kind of those early plants, the alders that come back. But there's also some rocky terrain. And I think Haines is just going to have to follow that process as well.
I know there had to have been talk in the community about what could this happen again and how could we prevent it? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm by no means an expert, but the community is waiting for a report from a contractor who's been studying the slide in the area and doing a lot of monitoring. And they should be getting more results on what the possibilities of a slide in that particular zone at Beach Road might be in the next month or so. But as for the rest of the area, I mean, so much of Haines was on, or of the more densely populated town site was on evacuation alert. And to what degree that area might be unstable in a future heavy rain event, or the area out Lutac Road, I'm unsure.
Right. Can't predict the future, but it is something to think about. There's a lot of other homes and people who could be in the path of a future slide as well. And here, too. I remember talks about avalanches and landslides really picked up after what happened in Haines, and the city started looking pretty closely. I don't know if it was a coincidence or related or not, but it was. It all seemed like it kind of was front of mind suddenly after what happened in Haines.
Federal geologists have said that Alaska is now kind of the landslide frontier of the nation. We're having the weather conditions that are prime for landslides, and that's just a reality that this region is having to face.
Claire Strimple, formerly of KHNS, now of KTOO, part of our news team. Thanks so much for being with me today to answer some of my questions about the Haines landslide 1 year later. Anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
No, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Well, thanks to all the snow we've had as late, the ski season is already underway for Juno's Nordic Ski Club, and it's not too late to get involved. So joining us today, we've got Frankie Pilafont, who is the president of the Juno Nordic Ski Club. Hi, Frankie.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. And no, it's never too late year round to get involved with the Juno Nordic Ski Club.
Well, I know it's a little early, but we've had a good amount of snow so far this year, this season. How's the skiing been?
It's fabulous. Another early season for us. We're grooming the Mendenhall Campground, Montana Creek, Pioneer Road. Eagle Crest has started grooming their lower loop and sounds like they might get to their upper loop. So for all sorts of skiing reasons, it's awesome.
All right. So we're here. There's snow. There's skiing. What is it that you want to talk about today for as far as it pertains to the Juno Nordic Ski Club? And also thanks in advance, by the way, for all the trails that you groom. I know lots of us use them.
Yes. Yes. Lots of people use them. We groom them for the benefit of all people in Juno. I just felt like I needed to highlight that. Of course, our membership dollars are what pay folks to go out and volunteer their time to groom. All our groomers are volunteers. What we're doing, and the reason I'm here this afternoon in particular, is because we're having our annual membership meeting tomorrow evening. And all members and non-members are welcome to join in and enjoy our, normally we would have a in-person potluck, but this will be the second virtual annual membership meeting. So find your favorite beverage and zoom in with us. The link is on our website at jnski.org, also on our Facebook page as well. It's pretty fun and to encourage people to hang out for the hour-ish annual membership business meeting. We also have some wonderful, we call them prizes for sticking around and enjoying the evening with us, from some of our local merchants, Copa and Nugget Alaska and Foggy Mountain, let me think. I don't have the whole list in front of me. I apologize. But those will be some real fun things. Heritage Coffee, Cycle Alaska as well. There's some real fun little things that we could share. And the Nordic Ski Club is also donating some of our merchandise, hat, buff, that type of thing. Anyway, it'll be fun. We'll report a little bit on the doings of the subcommittees that work hard pretty much year round anymore on the board to bring good skiing culture, Nordic skiing culture to Juneau.
Do you have to be a member to attend the meeting?
No, you can go to our website and use the Zoom link to log in. Of course, we'd love to have people be members. Those membership dollars are what allow us to operate. We don't get paid for grooming the trails. We pay out of the membership dollars to groom those. So,
right.
If you're a dog walker, for instance, if you're a dog walker and you like our groom trails, come on board.
It's always a good reminder to hear what supports the things that we really enjoy and that we appreciate, especially out on the trails, which so many people use all year round. So another thing I know you'll probably be talking about, if not in the meeting, but you can have a minute or two, you can discuss it today, the Community Foundation Stewardship Fund.
Oh, thank you very much for a couple minutes on that. The Juneau Nordic Ski Club started a Juneau Community Foundation Stewardship Fund 2.5 years ago, and we're hoping to have it to $100,000 by April of 2022. So we have a push going on for that right now. And what that will do, we feel $100,000 is a modest sum, because the interest from that will help us smooth out some of the bumps of membership, since we are a membership driven and funded organization. So we'd love to, we can talk to people more about that, or you can go to our website again. Our website's been updated this year, so there's a lot of information there. Or just send us an email at info@jnski.org.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today, but it was short and sweet. Thank you so much, Frankie Pilafant, president of the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. It was great to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Take care.